Dallas. The city's police chief has just said the Dallas shooter was working alone and wanted to, quote, kill white officers. Authorities have not released the name of the suspected shooter who died after the ambush. Your thoughts?
You know, again, this my sources were sort of telling me that, and I began to wonder, you know, what that would mean in the big picture. Obviously, to me, whoever did it, I wasn't concerned with their race, with anything like that at the level of at the human level. But at the level of our movements and our resistance movements, we need to make sure that we don't conflate, again, one person with a movement. They're two separate things. This person clearly has mental health issues. This person clearly has some sort of issue that needs to be unpacked and understood. But we can't link that individual to this movement. There's been a lot of long, hard work being done here, and we can't be derailed.
Mark Lamont Hill and Graham Weatherspoon, I thank you so much for being with us. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! Go to democracynow.org for all our updates. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Portland. The time is now 5 p.m. And coming up next is your KBOO Evening News.
Join us Sunday night, July 10th, from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Soul Music and Politics. We will celebrate the life and music of Mr. Donny Hathaway. We will also deconstruct the at-large voting process in Multnomah County and Portland, Oregon, that keeps the status quo power elite in power. Sunday night for Soul Music and Politics, July 10th, from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. on KBOO.
Keep on walking tall. Hold your head up high.
The 36th annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival is almost here, and KBOO will once again be carrying it live Saturday, July 16. The fun begins Friday night with blues artists such as Ken Emerson and Sister Mercy. Saturday and Sunday will deliver some of Portland's finest: Dan Bomber, Highwater Jazz Band, Joe Manis, Eric Lewis, Tim Wilcox, Mel Brown, Farnell Newton, and more. That's July 15th, 16th, and 17th under the St. John's Bridge at Cathedral Park, the longest running music festival in Portland. Brought to you by the Jazz Society of Oregon and KBOO. Full details at cpjazz.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a protest in Dallas turns deadly as police officers are targeted by snipers.
Oregon ranks third in identity theft.
And a GMO food bill has passed the U.S. Senate.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, July 8th, 2016. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. Five Dallas police officers and an attacker are dead after a mass shooting Thursday night. Officials say multiple snipers targeted police at the close of a peaceful protest march sparked by this week's fatal shooting, police shootings in Baton Rouge and suburban St. Paul, Minnesota. Seven police officers and two demonstrators were also injured. Nell Abrams from Free Speech Radio News reports.
Three suspects are in custody. And according to Police Chief David Brown, after hours of unsuccessful negotiations and an exchange of gunfire, police deployed a remote-controlled robot carrying an explosive device, which, when detonated, killed the fourth suspect. According to Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings, about 800 people attended the peaceful protest and were winding up the march when gunfire erupted from a nearby parking garage. Chief Brown claimed that before police killed him, the shooter told negotiators he was upset about the Black Lives Matter movement and wanted to kill white people, especially white officers, but this remains unconfirmed. President Barack Obama said the country is horrified by the Dallas shootings.
We also know that when people are armed with powerful weapons, unfortunately, it makes attacks like these more deadly and more tragic. And in the days ahead, we're going to have to consider those realities as well. In the meantime, today, our focus is on the victims and their families.
Obama is in Poland for a NATO summit. Earlier Thursday, the president also condemned the Louisiana and Minnesota killings. The Congressional Black Caucus says the Dallas shootings are yet another reason to move forward with gun safety measures that Republicans are refusing to bring up for a vote in the House. G.K. Butterfield is the chairman of the Black Caucus.
The Republicans in Congress are refusing to address gun violence in America that targets black men and black women and Hispanic men and Hispanic women, and yes, even police officers. The Congressional Black Caucus is frustrated. You want to say we're mad? We're mad. We are determined to take our advocacy now to a higher level.
Butterfield also said this week's fatal police shootings of Philando Castile and Alton Sterling must be addressed by Congress and law enforcement. And if they fail to act, it will be a long, hot summer.
A Donald Trump supporter has been arrested for pointing a gun at a crowd during last night's protest at Pioneer Square. The gunman has been identified as Michael Strickland, a conservative blogger who runs a YouTube channel known for harassing women and minorities. Strickland was at the Don't Shoot PDX protest when he claims that the crowd came after him. Video footage of the incident contradicts Strickland's statements. No shots were fired and no injuries were reported. Strickland was arrested by Portland police and booked for menacing and second-degree disorderly conduct, then later released on his own recognizance. He was arraigned earlier today and was ultimately charged with two felonies. He's being held on a $250,000 bail. The district attorney is seeking anyone who has been harassed by Strickland in the past.
An independent study has confirmed that race plays a significant role in police use of force. The three-year study was to be released Friday by the Center for Police Equity, a New York-based think tank. The study is entitled The Science of Justice: Race, Arrests, and the Police Use of Force. It points out that less than 2% of all police actions actually involve the use of force, but when they do, African Americans are 3.5 times more likely to encounter force than white Americans. Although many police departments refuse to share use of force data, this study included data from 12 cities and one county. Populations studied ranged from less than 100,000 to several million. Six of the cities are predominantly white, one is predominantly people of color, and five have populations in which no single ethnic group is 50% or more. Use of force range from relatively mild physical force through baton strikes, dog bites, pepper spray, tasers, and gunshots. Because of the diversity of the subject cities, it's assumed that these findings are probably true in most cities.
Now the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
Workers' Independent News Week in Review. I'm Doug Cunningham.
U.S. dock workers on both coasts observed an international hour of silence Thursday in honor of workers who have died on the docks around the world. The International Day of Action was organized by the International Dock Workers Council and the International Transport Workers Federation. The ILWU says it stands in solidarity with dock workers in America and around the world who are calling attention to dangerous working conditions on the docks. ILWU spokesperson Craig Merrilees says the hour of silence Thursday had a dual purpose for ILWU members.
To honor workers who died on the docks and to stand up for the rights of workers on the docks and all over the world who are facing repression and pushback from powerful international corporations.
Hundreds of SEIU, Local 1021 San Joaquin County workers are on an unfair labor practices strike. According to the local, those labor law violations include not bargaining in good faith, refusing to meet with the union to bargain, not making labor contract proposals, and withholding information the union is entitled to for bargaining. SEIU also alleges that the county is discriminating against union members and punishing workers for legal union activity. SEIU 1021 President Roxanne Sanchez told local reporters that understaffing is also a critical issue in San Joaquin County.
The understaffing in the county is at severe levels. They are refusing to acknowledge and to deal with that. The compensation is very low to recruit and to retain. But those are the issues at the table that we cannot engage the employer in a thoughtful and reasonable discussion.
SEIU says more than 800 positions authorized by the county budget are not filled. In Atlantic City Wednesday, Hillary Clinton blasted Donald Trump's business record as a selfish, systematic use of bankruptcy to enrich himself, while devastating workers, small businesses, and their communities. Four of Trump's Atlantic City properties, including casinos, went bankrupt.
When this casino collapsed, because of how badly he managed it, hundreds of people lost their jobs. Shareholders were wiped out. Lenders lost money. Contractors, many of them small businesses, took heavy losses, and many themselves went bust. But Donald Trump, he walked away with millions.
Clinton says America can't allow Trump to do to the country what he did to his businesses. Clinton said Trump brags about victimizing and taking advantage of workers, looting his businesses using bankruptcy laws.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
Workers Independent News provided by Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
More food composting is coming to Oregon. Residents of Forest Grove can now include food scraps in their yard debris bins. Compost will be collected weekly and taken to Nature's Needs in North Plains. Residents of Forest Grove can get up to 1 yard of compost from Nature's Need each year. This new service is being funded by a $1.50 increase to existing waste management fees.
This last Wednesday, we spoke to Bark live here in Studio 2 to talk about their upcoming hike on Mount Hood this Sunday. For this month's hike, Bark is partnering with the Native Plant Society of Oregon's Portland chapter. While Bark focuses on the many pollinators that call Oregon home, the Native Plant Society of Oregon focuses on the native plants that the pollinators depend on. We spoke to Native Plant Society of Oregon's Zach Weinstein to find out what people can expect to see this weekend.
The Calocortus subalpinus, which is a little mariposa lily. That's quite lovely. And then there was a Lilium Washingtonianum, which is just huge and looks like it could be in a garden, you know, like full-size lily flowers. And then there were just whole swaths of Gilia capitata, like little poof balls of blue. Michael got this gorgeous photo when we were scouting of this bee. I don't know what kind, but it was just sitting on that flower. Yeah, and in the woods on the way up, there was still rhododendron macrophyllum, our native rhododendron, blooming, a whole bunch of that. And there was bear grass, which is an amazing pollinator plant. It supports all sorts of pollinators. Just one species of plant does that, yeah. Yeah, but there were over 50 species of flowering plants on this walk, which you will rarely see that type of floral diversity. I mean, the only time you will in Oregon usually is like high elevation like this. And for this to be this proximity to Portland, it's special as well.
To learn more about the joint outing with Bark and the Native Plant Society of Oregon's Portland chapter, visit barkout.org or npsoregon.org.
According to a recent report by the Federal Trade Commission, Oregon ranks third in the nation for identity theft. Oregon News Service and KBOO's Ray Bodwell discussed some of the ways for people to protect themselves against fraud.
Oregonians are hitting the road for summer vacation, but they may need to keep a closer eye on their credit cards. The Beaver State ranked third for identity theft rates across the country in 2014, according to a report from the Federal Trade Commission. Only Florida and Washington had higher rates. Kyle Frick with the Mid-Oregon Credit Union says most fraud takes place when people provide card information online.
People get in trouble when they are using websites or places that may be unique or smaller or just very specialized types of things.
Frick says the good news is new technology is allowing people to stop fraud earlier. If information is stolen, credit unions like his have computer systems that can recognize unusual purchases and report back to card owners. Some new cards contain locator chips. If a purchase is made away from the card, the owner will be notified. Most new cards have EMV chips, which are more secure than cards with just magnetic strips. But Frick says EMV readers take a while to perform transactions, leading to another issue.
People walk away and forget to pull their card out. So that's a thing to be aware of. Make sure that you, one, remove your card from the EMV chip reader, and two, make sure you get your receipt.
Frick adds it's a good habit for people to check their financial accounts regularly and verify transactions. And during summer road trips, try not to make online purchases or access your financial information from hotels or other public Wi-Fi spots. In conjunction with Oregon News Service, this is Ray Bodwell for KBOO.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by the F Word at 6. At 7, Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Tomorrow's weather, more rain, showers in the morning and evening in the Willamette Valley. East of the Cascades and Hood River, partly cloudy skies with a chance of showers in the evening. On this date in 1853, an expedition led by Commodore Matthew Perry arrived in Yeddo Bay, Japan, on what has been historically called a diplomatic mission. Perry forced open the closed nation by threatening to open fire if the Japanese government refused to negotiate. Japan opened itself to trade a year later. The quote of the day comes from Senator Ron Wyden. He said, "Trade wars aren't started by countries appealing to respected independent trade authorities. Rather, trade wars begin when one country decides to violate international trade rules to undercut another country's industries."
It's 5:16, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Tony Blair, Britain's former prime minister, has lashed out at British voters for having, quote, a shared hostility to globalization, referring to their June 23rd decision to exit the European Union. A decade ago, PM Blair had backed expansion of EU's power over the citizens of Great Britain and 27 other European nations. So he took the Brits' recent rejection personally. In a New York Times op-ed, he rather prissily blamed the Brexit vote on populist demagogues who had caused, quote, palpitations in the body politic. Obviously befuddled, he asked, how did this happen? Well, sir, one reason is that you and other peers of Britain's privileged class long ago imposed policies that reduced the wealth and opportunities of common wage earners while greatly increasing the wealth and power of corporate executives and rich investors. Indeed, your prized European Union has become a messy, bureaucratic, multinational government of, by, and far corporate interests over common people. Located in faraway Brussels, EU officials make decisions that harm British working stiffs who never heard of the decision makers and have no power to replace them or to alter the decisions. That, Your Highness, is how and why the Brexit rejection of European government happened. It was a democratic shout of anger at the usurpation of the people's sovereignty and well-being by you and your fellow architects of corporate plutocracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, the obtuse, self-absorbed Tony Blairs of our world still don't get it. He concluded his op-ed by pleading with establishment centrists to regain political control from the people and, quote, find solutions that rise above populist anger. Exactly wrong, sir. The obvious solution is to understand and work with the angry populace rather than stoking their anger with more solutions raining down on them.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
This morning, the U.S. House of Representatives approved a bill to increase drug treatment programs across the country. But the bill does not actually provide the money to pay for the programs. House Democrats on the conference committee for the bill failed to get funding for the programs, despite an effort to include $920 million in the bill. The bill is expected to pass the Senate and be signed by the president. The chair of the bill's conference committee said that funding will come from the House and Senate Appropriations Committee. Besides addressing drug treatment programs, the bill provides state grants for overdose training for first responders and prevention of illegal opioid distribution.
FBI Director James Comey announced this week that the Bureau is recommending no charges be filed against Hillary Clinton regarding her use of private email servers and handling of classified information during her tenure as Secretary of State. That decision, the FBI director explained, was based on the absence of evidence of criminal intent in mishandling classified State Department emails. 2 days later, Comey defended the decision to hostile lawmakers in the House Oversight Committee. FSRN's Nell Abram has more.
Republican Representative Trey Gowdy of South Carolina complained that the FBI's decision to not prosecute Clinton, the presumptive Democratic nominee for president, creates the appearance of a two-tiered justice system.
And my real fear is this. It's what the chairman touched upon. This double-track justice system that is rightly or wrongly perceived in this country, that if you are a private in the Army and you email yourself classified information, you will be kicked out. But if you are Hillary Clinton and you seek a promotion to commander-in-chief, you will not be.
Most lawmakers focused on the mishandling of classified materials, but open government advocates say Clinton's use of a secret shadow communication system is part of a growing trend of government officials trying to dodge public record keeping, as required by laws like the Freedom of Information Act. Alex Howard is an analyst with the Sunlight Foundation, a nonpartisan group that advocates for transparency at all levels of government.
Clinton's choice to use a personal email system exclusively for government business is unusual. But it's just the most high-profile example of where you see public officials using personal devices, personal email accounts, and now the growing use of encrypted apps or ephemeral messaging to conduct public business in a way that may not be captured by open records laws, either by statute or by archiving systems or by audits of the Freedom of Information Act professionals at the state or, in this case, federal level.
Attorney General Loretta Lynch said this week that she accepts the FBI's recommendations and will not file charges against Clinton. Lynch has been criticized for privately meeting with former President Bill Clinton just days before the Justice Department was due to deliver its verdict whether to indict his wife. Lynch is likely to face questions of her own at a separate oversight hearing of the House Judiciary Committee next week.
In Washington, much focus has been on stalled gun control and Hillary Clinton's private email servers. But meanwhile, a food bill is moving swiftly but quietly through the U.S. Senate that would, at first glance, set a nationwide standard for GMO food. But those who question the safety of GMOs are not celebrating. They say the Senate bill as written could make it more difficult for consumers to know what they're eating. FSRN's Tanya Snyder explains.
Unless you grow all your own food, chances are you eat genetically modified products just about every day. That's because 93% of the soybeans grown in the U.S. are genetically engineered, and about 88% of the corn. Many staple crops are genetically modified to boost crop yields and protect from pests.
There's been no credible evidence that genetically engineered crops have resulted in any deleterious effects to human health.
That's Richard Amasino, a biochemistry professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and a co-author of a recent National Academy of Sciences study examining the health and safety of GMO crops.
To date, the industry that's been involved in making genetically engineered crops has a 100% perfect track record with regard to human health, which is a pretty rare thing.
The National Academy's verdict was that GMOs are safe to eat, and their environmental impact is mixed, but overall there are economic and social benefits to using GMO technology. That contradicts a 2009 Union of Concerned Scientists report that says claims of increased crop yields are exaggerated, and there are concerns that GMO crops encourage the use of more herbicides that taint groundwater and harm human and animal health. Opinion polls consistently show that most consumers want to know what's in their food. Vermont recently passed a law requiring GMO ingredients to be labeled. It went into effect last week. That sent the food industry into a tizzy, which spurred the U.S. Congress to do something out of character. Take action.
What we face is a handful of states that have chosen to enact labeling requirements on information that has nothing to do with health, with safety, or nutrition.
Republican U.S. Senator Pat Roberts of Kansas is co-sponsor of Senate Bill 764. His bill is moving swiftly through Congress and would create the nation's first federal GMO labeling standard. If passed, it would override any state law like Vermont's, which Roberts told fellow senators would bring disaster.
Those decisions impact the farmers in fields who would be pressured to grow less efficient crops so manufacturers could avoid these demonizing labels.
Whether GMO crops could really help fight global hunger is arguable. What's not up for debate is that the multi-billion dollar agribusiness industry behind GMOs is pushing hard for Senator Roberts' labeling bill to pass. So why would they do that?
This is a no-labeling bill. This is not a labeling bill.
Ronnie Cummins heads the Organic Consumers Association. He says Roberts' bill would actually undermine labeling efforts because it's full of exemptions. In fact, it wouldn't require GMO food to really be labeled at all. Under the law, merely listing a company website for more information or placing a QR code on the package that would need to be scanned by a smartphone would meet the standard of a so-called label.
Over the last 6-8 years, the big food companies and biotech companies have spent $400 million to make sure that you don't know whether your food is genetically engineered or not. And when you break it down to the 63 U.S. senators who just voted to shut off all debate about this, they, on the whole, get twice as much money from big ag and biotech companies as the people who voted against this bill. So there's a direct relationship between the amount of money that senators get and what they're saying about this so-called labeling bill.
Not all U.S. senators are on board with Senate Bill 764. Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon prefers to call it Monsanto's DARK Act. DARK stands for Denying Americans the Right to Know.
So here is a so-called mandatory labeling bill, but in fact, it does the opposite, denies Americans the right to know. This so-called mandatory GMO labeling bill isn't mandatory, doesn't label, and it excludes most GMO foods.
What's excluded? Food products that are derived from a GMO crop but don't contain traces of the actual DNA. Corn oil from GMO corn wouldn't need a label, nor would sugar refined from GMO sugar beets. They'd be exempt, Merkley says.
Monsanto's main three crops produce derivatives that do not have genetic information. This clause appears to be one that would make Monsanto jump for joy.
The U.S. Senate could vote on Senate Bill 764 as early as next week, sending it to the Republican-controlled House. Backers of the bill hope to have it passed before July 15th, when Congress breaks until after Labor Day. Tanya Snyder, FSRN, Washington.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Ray Bodwell and Jenna Yokoyama. Our producer is also Jenna Yokoyama. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News, the Oregon News Service, and Labor Radio. Our engineer is Ian Gadberry. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson-Osterland.
And I'm Liam Delta. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott host More Talk Radio. At 9, The Old Mole Variety Hour, a program of social and political commentary from a socialist feminist point of view. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Barbara Bernstein hosts Locus Focus, a weekly program about our place on the planet. At 11 on Health Watch, Ellen Goldsmith interviews Caverly Morgan, founder of Peace in Schools. They'll talk about the first for-credit high school mindfulness course in the nation. And at 11:30 on Health and Healthcare Forum, and at 11:30 on Roberta Hall speaks with Janet Stanger about Roberta Hall speaks with Janet Stanger about diet. The diet based on the whole plant. A diet based on the whole plant. How to prepare it and how it's a benefit. How to prepare it. Thank you, KBOO members, for your support. Thank you, KBOO members, for your support. Thursday, July 14th, during our Wednesday membership drive. During our KBOO membership drive from 6 a.m. Thursday till 7 a.m. Friday. Till 7 a.m. Stay tuned for Counterspin, followed by Brandon Rhodes' Consequence, followed by Brandon Rhodes' Great Weekend. And have a good night, Liam.
Good night, Liam.
Good night, Liam.